I offer my respectful obeisances to the Gita, which was spoken by the Lord, who is endowed with perfect qualities. It is a work by which the ocean of ignorance meets its complete end, by which pure bhakti becomes fully nourished to the highest degree, and by which the supreme truth, normally difficult to understand, becomes eternally manifest. So we have come to the end of Krishna's description of his opulences. In verse 39, he told us that he is the origin of chara, achara, all that which is moving, non-moving, the conscious, the unconscious. And he said that there is no being that can exist without me. So Prabhupada comments in the purport that the fact is, whatever existence is not founded on the energy of Krishna is called maya, that which is not. Which means that we should learn to see things the way he has described them, in relationship to him, understanding him always to be the power within everything that manifests something extraordinary, and everything in general. In this world, everything is extraordinary if we want to think about it a little. So it is based on him. And if we don't see that connection between the things and Krishna, then what happens? Maya. Immediately we become submerged by illusion. As soon as we lose, you know, we have to train ourselves somehow to see how this is connected with Krishna, each and everything in our life. Whatever happens, whatever relationships we have, people we meet, events, accidents, anything. We have to always see the connection with Krishna. Otherwise, we are under illusion, we are illusioned, and it's not a safe place to be. So therefore this chapter is a means to remember Krishna by seeing him everywhere, and it's a means to connect everything to Krishna in such a way that we actually always remain in a transcendental consciousness. It is by seeing that connection with Krishna that we remain in a transcendental consciousness. Otherwise we merge into the things and we become attracted to them for what they are, instead of being, you know, attracted to Krishna. I don't know if I told you one time, I forgot if I told you that one time I was giving this course, it was in the Hindi batch actually. I was giving the teaching, and I told you there was one devotee in the class. He had such an angelic face. And he would smile all the time. He was always kind of in good mood. And he would just smile and smile and smile. And there was some kind of angel type of thing on his face. And I was always thinking, wow. I was trying to see him in a positive way, in a creative way. It's such a person, such a nice person. And then one day I was sitting in Srila Prabhupada Samadhi, and he came to me one morning to ask about the schedule or something. And he came, and as usual he came with this beautiful smiling and sweet, but sweet face. And because I was in the middle of my japa and I was in front of Prabhupada, and then suddenly I just understood, wow, this is Krishna's sweetness that is permeating. This is this quality somehow or other I managed to connect the way Krishna says in this purport here, that you see the origin and where this thing is coming from, what is it and where is it coming from. And that day I could perceive that kindness, there was this such kind of kindness and sweetness that was always coming through that person, which was a quality. And that day I understood, how nice and soft and sweet Krishna is. So, sorry? Well, there are many people like this, you know, who carry different kinds of we all carry something. Sometimes somebody is super like intelligent and sharp, and it's like wow. We get mesmerized, we get attracted, or we admire, or we, you know. But actually, if we can catch that this quality is actually Krishna's quality. And it's so beautiful to see it just manifested right there. So this will save us from trouble in life, if we can always see like this. You know, some people are very good dressers, for example. Some people are always dressed in such an elegant way. But this is Krishna. This is the way he dresses. So all these qualities are coming from him. If we can just catch that, then we'll remain out of, you know, trouble in this world. Because in that way we become, when we see the beauty, the opulence and all these things, Krishna will say now, this vibhuti, shri, we see all this, and our meditation, if it is placed in the right place, as we have been taught in this chapter, then we see Krishna. We learn things about him because everything comes from him. So whenever we catch something, it's part of him, and we learn about him, how he is. So now in 40 to 42, Krishna gives his conclusion. Nantosti mama divyanam vibhutinam parantapa esha tuddashata prokto vibhuter vistaromaya. O mighty conqueror of enemies, this is Parantapa, Arjuna, there is no end to my divine manifestations. Na anto asti mama divyanam vibhutinam. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. So Prabhupada says, Uddeshataha means as examples. So what is Krishna saying here? That my opulences are unlimited. I can continue on like this. Who else continues forever chanting the glories of Krishna? Anantadev. He goes on and on through his thousand mouths since the beginning of time, and he keeps going with the opulences of Krishna, the glories of Krishna. There is no end, he says. There is no end. And what I have done is I just gave you a few examples. Prabhupada says in the purport, to pacify your inquisitiveness. You wanted to know? So this is just to make you happy, pacify you. But otherwise we can go on forever. There is no end. 41. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimat urjitam evava tattadeva vagacchatvam mamatejam sasambhavam. So Krishna started to reveal where all these things are coming from, because he said it's coming from me, but now he's going to indicate something more. Know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. So what does it say here? Anything, Krishna says, vibhuti, anything that has vibhuti mat Then there is Srimat, everything that is beautiful, and Urjitam, everything that is glorious. So these are different things that he talked about previously. Something which is extraordinary, opulent, something which is extraordinary, beautiful, like the Himalayas we talked about. Something which is glorious. Why is it glorious? We heard of the qualities that make something glorious, and those qualities, they come from him. So, what are all these? Mama, he says, Mama, Teja, Amsha, Sambhavam. Sambhavam means they are born. They are born of one portion. Amsha is a fragment, a part. Prabhupada says a spark of my Teja. Teja is the power. It's the power of Krishna, which is translated here as splendor. Any glorious or beautiful existence should be understood to be but the fragmental manifestation of Krishna's opulence, whether it be in the spiritual or material world. Anything extraordinarily opulent should be considered to represent Krishna's opulence. Srila Prabhupada explains that how we should see when there is something extraordinary, we should always understand that it's not completely material. Krishna is behind. He says, for example, he's talking of devotees. In spiritual advancement, one's material position improves at the same time that the path of liberation becomes clear and one is freed from material bondage. If one is situated in an opulent position in spiritual advancement, his opulence never decreases. Therefore, such a spiritual benediction is called bhuti or vibhuti. Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam mama tejam sa sambhavam. If a devotee advances in spiritual consciousness and thus becomes materially opulent also, his position is a special gift from the Lord. Such opulence is never to be considered material. So what is Prabhupada explaining here?
Yeah. The material opulence should not be considered material because it is granted by Krishna. So it is actually spiritual opulence.
Yeah, it is granted by Krishna. Krishna is sanctioning that and is giving it because that person is using it, is going to use it in Krishna's service. So that opulence, we shouldn't say, oh, that's his punya karma. No, it's not. That Krishna is actually giving to the devotee whatever is required for the service or otherwise as a reciprocation, personal reciprocation. From some devotees, he takes away everything, and to some devotees, he gives everything. That's up to him. Another understanding of these vibhutis, because Krishna says it's unlimited, there are so many vibhutis, so many vibhutis. Srila Madhvacharya gives a quotation from the Tantra Nirnaya, which says, from Lord Brahma down, all the living entities engaged in the service of the Lord are extraordinary vibhuti. A living entity is specially empowered to act on behalf of the Lord is called vibhuti, whereas the Vishnu Tattva incarnations of the Lord, such as the Matsya Avatar, are called vibhava. So it's an expansion of the Lord's power, all what we heard. He's empowering demigods, he's empowering all kinds of different living entities to do something in this world, to have a certain presence, a certain influence in this world. So this is all given by him. So in this way, there are unlimited numbers of vibhutis. And now he says, yeah, everything is springs from me. We'll read this in the end. This is the conclusion here. So then Krishna says, 42, Athava bahunaitena kimyatena tavarjuna vishtabhyaham idam krishnam ekam shena stito jagat. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So this is a very, very famous verse in which Krishna here reveals himself as the Paramatma. Because what is it? Who is it? What is this fragment of Krishna with whom he pervades the entire universe? That is the Paramatma. So Krishna is saying here that there is no need to actually study all these opulences. There's no need. What you should study rather is the root of all the opulences. There's no need to know all these things. And specifically, there is no need. They are wasting their time, those people who just study those opulences one by one by one by one by one. It's not required. Actually, they have no separate existence. This is what we have to learn from this chapter. Nothing has a separate existence from Krishna. This is the Vaishnav point of view. Why? They exist because Krishna has entered that material energy. Otherwise, they would not be there. So through this, Srila Prabhupada explains, the Lord here tells Arjuna that there is no point in understanding how things exist in their separate opulence and grandeur. He should know that all things are existing due to Krishna's entering them as the super soul. And so Srila Prabhupada says another thing that we should understand from this chapter one more time, which he has already preached before, but now he's kind of giving again another proof for that. What is it? What is some other important point that we should understand from this chapter? No one is greater than Krishna. No one is equal to Krishna, especially who? The devatas. Prabhupada says, so from this chapter, through this chapter, Krishna is also showing that he's discouraging the worship of the devatas. Why should you worship the devatas? I am the source of the devatas. They are empowered by me. When I want to give them power, they have it. When I don't want, they don't have it. So this is again, you know, showing us the path of worshipping him. The Prabhupada says, worship of demigods is thoroughly discouraged hearing, because even the greatest demigods like Brahma and Shiva represent only part of the opulence of the Supreme Lord. Why should we worship the part? We should worship the root. We should worship the whole. So this is the conclusion that Krishna wants to draw here. Just worship me. Without deviation. Srila Prabhupada gives the conclusion, his conclusion, and then he gives Baladev Vidyabhushan's conclusion to his commentary on this chapter. Prabhupada says, devotional service and worship of Krishna are very clearly indicated in this chapter, in verses 8 through 11. What was that? The Chaturshloki, yes. That is the way of pure devotional service. How one can attain the highest devotional perfection of association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been thoroughly explained in this chapter. So this chapter points towards pure devotional service. In the beginning, where Krishna explains, I am the source of everything, and then he explains the nature of his devotees and how he reciprocates with him, and how in this way, I mean, this was the perfection of devotion itself, when the Lord and his devotee are so close at heart, they know each other, and Krishna does anything for his devotees. Then Prabhupada gives Baladev Vidyabhushan's conclusion. From Lord Krishna's potent energy, even the powerful sun gets its power, and by Krishna's partial expansion, the whole world is maintained. Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna is worshipable. So Krishna powers the sun, which gives material energy in this universe, and he powers the super soul, which is the transcendental source of all energy, both material and spiritual. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur similarly concludes, everything in this universe is Krishna alone, and he is thus worthy of service. By intelligence given by this realization, one should taste his sweetness. But this should be our conclusion upon reading this chapter. We should decide to worship Krishna. So, ekam sena stito jagat. What is the position of the super soul in this, as we understand here, in this world, as we understand it through his chapter? What does the super soul do, as we understand from this chapter? We know in general what he does. What does he do with everything, the super soul? He enters into everything, he maintains it. What else we heard? What else he does, the super soul? He sanctions activities. He controls also. We see so many regulative agents here, like we saw Yama. He regulates, he controls. He is the basis. We saw. He is the source. He is the basis. He is the support. He is the ruler. We saw also he is the cause of the creation. And the important thing that we understand by this statement is that Krishna is the source of Vishnu. This is what is revealed in this chapter here, very clearly, that there is Krishna, he is the original Lord, complete Lord, and Vishnu is his partial expansion. So this is important for us, because as you know, at least for those who preach in India, that not everyone agrees with this. And many will say that actually Narayan is the Supreme, right? Everyone knows that Krishna appeared with four arms and then he became two arms. So they say that Krishna comes from Vishnu. But from these statements we understand, Krishna says, it's my amsa. And with a fraction of myself, I pervade this entire universe. So Krishna is indicating As he said before, Matta Parataram Naniyat, there's no one superior to me. And with only one fraction of myself, I control this entire world. Rukmini, you have a question? I'll read a little something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto here. Prahlad Maharaj said, do you remember? There was a discussion between Prahlad and his father. And what did the father ask? What is the source of your strength? His father asked, you know, because he was seeing this is impossible, this little kid. You know, he tried to kill him in so many ways, and he was like a bouncing ball, you know. He was just coming up again and again, and he was always smiling, and he was happy, and he was dancing with his friend, and his father was going nuts with him. So he asked him, what is the source of your strength? And what did Prahlad answer? My dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. The source of the demon's strength. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Not only this, he is not only the source of our strength, but we don't have any strength. It's all his strength. It all comes from him. Without him, no one can get any strength. Whether moving or non-moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada explains, if one sees extraordinary strength or power anywhere, it is derived from the Supreme Lord. To give an example, there are different grades of fire, but all of them derive heat and light from the sun. These are how the wise people see. How does the fire derive strength from the fire? From how does the fire derive strength from the sun? It dries. It is said that the fire is stored in the wood. Yeah, it is said that the sun, you know, sends its rays of heat all over the creation, and that heat enters everything, and it is stored, especially inside the wood. The heat is stored inside the wood, and finally, when you rub two pieces of wood together, then that heat comes out. So there is the origin of all heat and light in this universe. It comes from the sun. Similarly, all living entities, big or small, are dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One's only duty, therefore, this is the conclusion here, is to surrender. For one is a servant and cannot independently attain the position of master. Understanding the subordinate position of the living entity takes millions of births. But when one is actually wise, he surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it looks like we have come to the end of a long journey. Millions of births to come to this conclusion. This is 787. Any questions on this chapter? Except about the planet of the trees.
Thank you.
No, in general also, you know, because everything is, yeah, is the source of it. Yes, yeah. And of course, particularly with the devotees, we should know that, you know, that Krishna is directly empowering the devotees. So it's even more visible with them, in the sense that, how to see that, in general, anything that is extraordinary in anybody, that extraordinary feature, it's because of Krishna, is extraordinary, you know. But in the devotees, it also comes, but you can say for those people, well, they worked hard for it. It's the result of their punya karma, or it's the result of their endeavors, and so on. But for the devotees, it may or may not be even the result of that. Krishna directly, you know, supplies energy to the devotee. Yeah. Yeah, the source of it is Krishna. Yeah, in that sense, it's not material. This seeing it as material, that is Maya. We read that. But as soon as we disconnect it from Krishna, that's material. But when we connect it and we see that Krishna is the source, you can, then that's not completely material. Krishna, you see Krishna as the source. So actually, it's His manifestation. So that's not really, you know, it's a different of vision to see like this. To see always Him as the origin of it. As soon as we connect with Him, then the difference between spirit and matter becomes very thin. Anything else? Oh, yes, Prabhu? Yeah, okay. Some of the things that he has mentioned are easy to understand. I am the strength of the strong. Okay, I accept that. But then when we talk of Eravata, then people ask, who is Eravata? And then we explain, he's a white elephant with four tusks. And he was born from the churning of the ocean of nectar. Sure, I'll come back. Yeah, it is true. The thing is that Prabhupada explained us that the Vedic reference is not like the books that we would read, which are compiled by any authors of today. They will take as a frame of reference whatever is happening in the world today. And in which world? Only in this little world where we live here. Whatever is around the planet. And even sometimes some authors, you know, they were born in a village, they never left their village, and they think that whatever happens in their village, that's the whole world. They don't even know about what's happening in China, in Africa, in the North Pole. So the frame of reference in the Vedic literature is very vast. First of all, it descends in Guru Parampara through time. So the frame of reference is not contemporary. It comes from long, long, long time ago. And when we also hear like there are cycles of the material energy, Satya, Treta, and this and that, and there are days of Brahma and all this, we can understand that. I mean, if you see for yourself, when you were like 10 years old, you think about your place where you were born, especially if you happen to be born in a village or somewhere. And then you see now, 30 years later or more, hasn't it changed? Haven't the values changed? Right? When we were very, very young. I remember, just to speak of India, when I came first time to India in 1981, there were no cars. So I can easily imagine that somebody who was like 10 years old in 1981, and who is now, who knows how old, 60 or something, or more, that person has seen a big change taking place in the country. And this is the change of, due to technology. Huge change. There were no cars. There was no Bisleri water. We knew only the toilet. That's all. Because we were drinking the local water and we were always sick. So materially, if things can change so much over a period of 30 years, 40 years, so much change, you know. And not only externally, externally the things have changed, but the moral, the morality and the habits of the people. You know, when I came in 1981 in India, everyone was wearing dhoti, kurta, sari. There was hardly any people wearing pants. Right? That didn't exist. There were vegetarian restaurants everywhere. You had to look for those who wanted to look for. Once in a while, there was something saying non-veg. And it was not something with a good reputation. It was understood to be a low-class place. So, so much change has happened. And somebody who takes birth today in India, or is 10 years old today, when you tell him about these things, he can't relate. You know, today the computer generation, when you tell them there was a day when we didn't have phone, you know? Oh, yeah? And how were you doing things? How were you doing things without phones? Yeah, when Srila Prabhupada, do you know, he constructed the empire of ISKCON without internet. Believe that? They used to send messages, you used to go to the post office and they had the, what is it called? Telegraph. The telegraph, the guy would go like tick, 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 tick. There was a code of transmitting sound by a number of tick, 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 tick. And this was, but how do we, so we can't relate to these things. We can't understand, how did they do that? You know, Prabhupada used to keep in touch with all his leaders all over the world by telegraph and by mail. He would dictate the letters, they would type them, at least typewriter was there, cluck, 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 you know. I used to have one. And you type and you know, and when you make a mistake, it's forever. And then you fold that, you put it in an envelope, you have to go buy the stamp. In India, there used to be no glue behind the stamps. You had to buy the pot of glue as well. And you go to the post office and everything was full of glue everywhere. And you would just put that glue and put the stamp there and put it in the box and pray. And it would reach after, who knows, 10 days, 20 days. But Prabhupada managed the whole of ISKCON, the expansion worldwide through mail and telegraph, you know. And the phone, what phone? It was these things. So it has changed so much within a period of 50 years. So now intelligent people understand, guess what it was even 50 years before that. And guess what it was even 50 years before that? What a huge difference in the habits of the people, the character of the people, the external environment. So it's just a question of logic that there are certain things we must accept that things were not always the way that they are today. And then another logic of the Vedic Shastra, besides the fact that they refer, their frame of reference is over a long period of time. So yes, people used to live 100,000 years. Who can say no? Who can say no? Why not? Today they hardly live for, you see, it's Sancharya's mother, she's over 40. And she's already, you know, getting... such a heavy disease at the age of 40. And it's written in the Bhagavatam that in the end of Kali Yuga, what is old age is what age? 20 years old. At 20 years old, people die. This is the life expectancy. And if it is like now, it says now it's 100 years and we live only 75 if you're lucky. So imagine at that time, in the end of Kali Yuga, it says 20 years, but most of the people won't live 20 years. So we must accept that over time there are many changes. The other frame of reference of the Bhagavatam and the Vedic literature is also interplanetary, which is very difficult for people to understand. They are wondering today, is there life on other planets? First question was, are there other planets? Then slowly through their telescopes, they figured there are many planets. The next question is there life on other planets? So this is why, because they don't learn by hearing, and also because the capacity of humans have decreased, and Prabhupada also explained, because interplanetary exchanges, which were there before, are no longer there. People don't come. The devatas, they used to come here. They don't come anymore. Why they don't come? It is no longer suitable for them. And the other aspect of it is we do not have the punya to actually manifest them, to call them here. We don't have the punya. Before, people used to make a yagya and, you know, the yagya purusha would just appear. The devata would appear. But now it's not like that. If the fire appears, you're lucky. That's true. You know? Because first of all, you have to find wood, which is becoming rare. So there is this cross, you know, this reference, interplanetary reference, which is there. And it's not only interplanetary in the sense that people understand it nowadays, it's also from gross to subtle. That before, people were so much more subtle. And now we are so gross. We can't see anything. We need mobile phone, yes. It's very gross perception. So we can try to get them to understand these points. Isn't it a fact? All these things are facts, you know. So the reference is very different. And I told you one time, of course that's not what we have to answer to them, but this is the spirit that Prabhupada taught us in Australia when that boy asked, when Prabhupada was talking of the elephants that fly from planet to planet and eat... Eagles that fly from planets to planets and catch elephants for their breakfast. So the boy was saying, Prabhupada said, do you have any questions? And one boy was very brave, so he raised his hand and Prabhupada said, yes. So that boy said the same, what you say? He said, Prabhupada, you said that there are eagles? Prabhupada said, yes. Giant eagles? Prabhupada said, yes. That fly from planets to planets? Prabhupada said, yes. And they eat elephants for breakfast? And then Prabhupada said, yes. So that boy said, Prabhupada, it's hard to believe. Then what did Prabhupada say? I told you that story before. I didn't tell you that story before. Prabhupada said, what do you know? You are not even out of the womb of your mother. And what did Prabhupada mean by this? You are not out of the... You haven't even come out. That's what he said. You haven't even come out of the womb of your mother. What did he mean by that? What is the womb of the mother?
Ignorance.
The cover of material nature. This is where we are. We are under this cover of material nature. And so there are so many things that look inconceivable to us. Prabhupada also explained that you can't understand the devata. You can't understand them, you can't see them. Just like an ant cannot see you. See, Prabhupada explains the ant, you know, we see the ant, it's crawling on the ground. Where is that guy going, you know? He's going this way, this way, this way, this way. It's coming back. It's going this way, it's going this way, it's going. You're thinking, my God, what a life. So we see the ant and we think, what a waste, you know. He's after, and when he finds a little piece of sugar, he grabs on the piece of little thing. And then you try to take the thing away and he doesn't leave it. At the cost of his own life, he will not leave the piece of little thing that he found. So someone who looks from a superior position, you know, Prabhupada was saying, do you think you live in this room, you may appreciate the pictures on the wall, wherever you go, there are some pictures, oh, it's beautiful. Can the ant see the pictures? No. For the ants, this is not a room. Understand? For the ants, this is not a room. For the ants, there are no walls. For the ants, there are no pictures of the wall on the walls. So this is the difference between the vision of the ant and me. So Prabhupada said, understand. There is also a difference between your vision and that of the devatas. They also exist. They also exist. But for them, the vision is very different. Because they see, you know, they are so much more powerful and they are free from a certain degree of illusion. They are in goodness. So, this is how we can try to make them understand that by logic we can catch that. Come on, you know. But of course Prabhupada says that the rule today, what is the rule today is seeing is believing. So that is their problem. Seeing is believing. Prabhupada said, no, this doesn't work. Seeing is believing. You can't even see your nose at night. You can't see your eyelids, so you don't have some. You don't have any eyelids just because you can't see them. They are there, you can't see them, so they don't exist. As soon as the light goes off, you cannot see your hands, so your hands don't exist. They have no arguments. It's quite obvious that we just can't perceive everything. So in this way we can try. And the main thing is when we preach is don't point out at Eravata, you know. Just tell him of the aquatics, the shark is one of the biggest, so, you know, anything big, that's Krishna. Try to show them the elements that they can relate to, and yeah, just tell them Iravata was a big elephant. We cannot always. It is difficult for us towards to speak of others. That's why Prabhupada said it's only understood through devotion. Unless we start hearing and applying ourselves to devotion to Krishna, we cannot understand. So now, after hearing this Ekam Sena Stito Jagat, what is Arjuna going to do? He wants to see, right? Seeing is believing. So he wants to see. He wants to see. So this is called Vishwarup Darshan Yoga. This is the 11th chapter, the universal form. This chapter 10, as we heard, explained devotional service and how Vishnu is the source of all material opulences. Now in chapter 11, we are actually going to see that, how Krishna, we are going to see something more. We're going to hear more the same thing presented in a different way, in the form of a vision that Arjuna is having. We're going to see the subtle part. Krishna has explained the gross part. You see the Himalayas? Well, that's me. It's coming from me. But how it's coming, how it's actually in action, how it's coming from Krishna, this is what Arjuna is going to see in the 11th chapter. On the subtle platform, how is it all happening? So he's going to see the devas, he's going to see the transformation of the energy, he's going to see so many things. But Prabhupada explains it's all material, it's not spiritual. Only in the end, he's going to ask to see Krishna's spiritual form. And at that time, Krishna will show him his four-handed form, transcendental form. And then he will again, you know, show him his two-handed form, being the cause of all causes. So this chapter has the particularity to reveal what happened, you know, the subtle aspects that are behind this manifestation of the world. And it has the particularity also of presenting Krishna's transcendental form in contrast with that material, subtle aspect of him. This chapter is also a very emotional time for Arjuna. He's working on his relationship with Krishna. So we should do the same during this chapter. Work on our relationship with him. Work on our faith. In this chapter, Arjuna is going to go from friendship to wonder when he's going to start having this vision. He's startled, he's in wonder. And then fear, he's going to be afraid. Then awe and reverence, he's going to start praying. And then regret. Why regret? Because? He remembers, I treated Krishna like a human being, like a friend. You know, so he will regret. And then there will be gladness mixed with fear. And then finally in the end, the friendship will be reinstated. So these are different emotions that he's going to go through. In this chapter, we have 5 sections. 1 to 8, this is Arjuna's request to see the Virat Rupa. The universal form is called Virat. Virat Rupa. And then 9 to 31, we're going to hear a description of the Vishwarup by Arjuna. First, Krishna is going to describe a little bit in the beginning, but then Arjuna will give us his realization of what all this is about, what he's seeing. Then 32 to 34, I was thinking this Arjuna is like, you know, when you watch a match on the television, you know, the commentator said, now he's running towards the goal and you're going to shoot again. So this is, Arjuna is describing everything that he's seeing. Then 32 to 34, this is very short, but this is an important part, which is Krishna's request. Be my instrument. He's asking Arjuna. And he's not just asking Arjuna, guess what? He's asking us. This is what he wants from us, ultimately. So we may take it up today, or we may take it up tomorrow, but this is what Krishna wants. Become my instrument. I have a mission in this world, and I need hands to work This is what Krishna is asking here. Then 35 to 46, prayers by Arjuna. Also, it's a praise of Krishna mixed with his realizations. Then 47 to 55, this is the revelation of Krishna's transcendental form. And it will be explained how this form is seen by devotees only. So we'll do a little bit of this here. These are not complicated verses, it's just Arjuna's request. Arjuna uvacha madanugrahaya paramam guhyam adhyatma sangitam yachayoktam achastena mohoyam vigato mama. So in 1 to 3 Arjuna praises what Krishna has just spoken and expresses his own feelings. Arjuna said, by my hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has now been dispelled. So what is Krishna's feeling in this verse here? Remember, this is a feeling chapter. Arjuna's feeling, yes. What is Arjuna's feeling here? Gratitude, yes. This is what he's feeling. Mad anugrahaya paramam. Just to show me favor. Anugraha indicate that he recognizes that it was all Krishna's mercy, that he has revealed to him all this knowledge that we've been hearing chapter after chapter. So this is a quality of a disciple that we have to note here, that we should always be grateful for what we get, remembering that we could have not gotten it. So it was Krishna's kindness, Krishna's mercy on him. And unless we have this quality of gratitude towards the spiritual master, towards Krishna, the relationship cannot be complete. This gratitude is also part of our dependency, dependence upon Krishna. And it's a key factor. It's a key factor. It can only be there again if there is non-enviousness. If we are envious, we can't be grateful. Or if we are too puffed up, we can't be grateful. We think we deserve it anyway. And we deserve it. I remember the first days when I joined the ashram. I was living in the ashram, and naturally, bad girl, I was seeing so many faults everywhere in the devotees. It's not always easy to live in an ashram. It's not easy to live with other people. And I was thinking, everything I hear during the Bhagavatam class and I read in the books, they're all doing ulta, you know, opposite. Fault-finding nature. I was thinking, you know, every day we hear in the Bhagavatam class, like, devotees are wonderful. And also that we devotees do like this, do like that. And I remember there was a girl who used to always never finish her plate of prasadam. This was one thing we were taught, that prasadam you should respect and you don't take more. You finish what you have on your plate. And so many devotees never absorb this kind of thing. So there was one girl all the time, she used to stick that half-finished plate of prasadam under the cupboard. And then she would forget it. Then after some time, something strange in this room. It smells something. And then he would find the plate under the cupboard. I was so annoyed. And then the Bhagavatam class was saying that you know, the association of a devotee is a blessing. And I was trying to figure out how to combine the two. too. And then, you know, I was trying to go to bed early, and of course they were much more advanced than me, so they needed less sleep. So they would quack, 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 quack. And then in the morning, you know, when I needed a little bit more sleep because I was new, so I was waking up just before, at four, like four, and they would get up at three, put all the lights on and talk and throw things all over and all that. So one day I went all the way up to the temple president's office and I said, I want to know. What's so great about the Association of Devotees? And I was telling him that what, you know, I don't understand, you know. They do everything against what we hear in the Bhagavatam class. How can you keep them here? What kind of people are they? You know, I don't understand. So I was going on and on and on. They did this, they did that, they did this, they do that, they do this, they do that, they do this, they do that. I can't understand. I said, you know, I came here, I thought there would be some good association, and instead of that, blah, 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 blah. So the temple president, you know, he was extremely merciful, but he was merciful in a very sharp way, like, and he just looked at me and he said, because he understood, he could see through, you know, where I was coming from. And he told me something I never forgot. And he said, who do you think you are to deserve good association? First qualify yourself, then it will come. Yeah, but he knew that I was too much. So he just said, who do you think you are to deserve good association? You deserve. That was the point. Be grateful of what you got, you know. What is this, I deserve good association? You deserve, you know. And then he said, if you think you're better than them, go teach them. But you have to teach by example. So he was like, for me it was like, I was shaken. I came out of his office and I realized, yeah, I was going the wrong way. I was going the wrong way. Because there was no gratitude. I couldn't appreciate, you know. I couldn't appreciate the good qualities of the devotees. I couldn't see their good side. I couldn't see the wonder of being, you know, liberated from the association of non-devotees. That's why I had joined ISKCON, because I couldn't tolerate living with non-devotees anymore. And so we have to be grateful. And this is a quality that we have to cultivate in ourselves, this appreciation and gratitude. Otherwise, we will not get any more. You know, if Krishna says that we are not grateful for what he has given, he's not going to give us any more. So we have to be careful. So here Arjun praises the knowledge that Krishna has given. Paramam guhyam adhyatma sangitam, that you have given me, you have considered me worthy of receiving secret knowledge. So he's very thankful. And then what has happened to him? My illusion has now been dispelled. If you remember, in the third chapter, Krishna had told him, it says here, moho yam vigato mama. These words, similar words were used in the third chapter. Yudhyasva vigata jvara. That being free from this fever, vigata, being free from this fever, jvara, you fight. So now, he's saying, yeah, that is now, it is, this fever was moha, it was the illusion. So he said, my illusion is now gone. And what is that illusion? What is he seeing now? He's seeing that Krishna is not a human. He is not a friend, but he is the source of everything. Prabhupada says this chapter reveals Krishna as the cause of all causes. Krishna is not an incarnation even. He is the source of all incarnations. Arjuna no longer thinks of him as a mere human being, as a friend of his, but as the source of everything. Arjuna is very enlightened and is glad that he has such a great friend as Krishna. But now he is thinking that although he may accept Krishna as the source of everything, others may not. So Prabhupada is revealing here why Arjuna wants to see the Vishvarupa. Why he wants to see? Did you see his reasons? Why he wants to see the Vishvarupa? Sorry?
To establish Krishna's divinity.
Divinity, not just for himself, but for others. He wants to establish it. For himself, he's satisfied. He's happy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Arjuna says, I do not have any doubt about what you have said about yourself. I believe it. I don't need to see it. But that's for others. Bhavapyayo hi bhutanam shruto vistarasho maya tvatta kamalapatraksha mahatmyam apichavyayam. Oh, lotus-eyed one. So now he starts addressing Krishna with a different name. Oh, lotus-eyed one. Of course, he always had lotus eyes, but, Sorry? Arjuna just noticed. Yes. So, I have heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity, and I've realized your inexhaustible glories. So he's expressing his realization, and he praises Krishna's greatness, that you are the source of every living entity. Your glories, mahatmyam, the mahatmya, they are inexhaustible, avyayam. So he's praising him in that way. Thank you, Bhishma. So Arjun here is expressing some joy, and he's appreciating Krishna's beauty. So Krishna has lotus eyes, Kamala Patraksha. What else is lotus in Krishna?
Everything.
He has a lotus face. What is his lotus face called? I have one word here. Our Sanskritist can tell us more. It's called Anana Ambuja. Anana is the face. And the lotus is Ambuja. There are many words for the lotus. Padma. And there is what? Ambuja. Pankaja. Aravinda. Niraj. Abja. So many names are there. Yeah. Aravinda. Yeah. Ambuja. Jalaruha. Jalaruha. Yeah, so many. So he is lotus face, he is lotus eyes. What is he also?
Lotus feet.
Padambuja. He is lotus navel, yes. Pankaja nabhi. Pushkara also is lotus. Pushkara nabhi. And he is what also? Lotus hands. Karakamala. Tava karakamala varenakam. Karakamala is the lotus hand. Lotus mouth. This is Mukhamboja. Very beautiful. Oh. So this is Arjuna's meditation right now. He has just been struck by Krishna's beauty. Eva metadya tathatvam atmanam parameshvara.
Drashtumichatim te rupam Eshvaram Purushottama. O greatest of all personalities, Purushottama, O Supreme Form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. So this is his request here. Saying, and the Prabhupada explained that he satisfied himself. He satisfied seeing Krishna in front of me. He has no doubts. But he wants to see him. And he hopes that Krishna is understanding his desires. Therefore, he is calling him Parameshvara Purushottama, who is the Lord who lives within the heart, the super soul. So he wants to see. So again, why he wants to see? We have heard that he wants to see to establish Krishna, Krishna's divinity for all. What else we hear in this purport here? For imposters, yes. When they will say that I am an incarnation, so what should we ask them? Can you please show your universal form? So to set a criterion. What does he say?
You do not have qualifications.
Give me, Prabhu. This is the arguments of the demons. So this is the criteria for future generations, future incarnations, Prabhupada explains. So, as we have seen by Prabhuji's smartness, it's not easy in this age to convince them.
It really happened once when Prabhupada was there. He was in Bombay and somebody said, I am God. And he read Bhagavad Gita and he got so emotional and he went to that person. And then that person told this. And he got more angry. This disciple was very new. He started to go and attack that person, but his followers all caught him and threw him out. And then he went and reported to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, see, we have to know the place and the circumstance. So he's not easily saying that he's God because he has so many followers. That's why he's speaking like that. So we have to be very careful when we try to address. So Prabhupada never wanted to meet people like this. Like many times the disciples would say, Prabhupada, when he speaks like that, why don't we go and challenge? And he said, it won't work.
Yeah.
They're very smart too.
Yeah, very smart and also completely blunt to reality and to the kind of karma they are getting into and so on. And also, it's also in one sense Prabhupada's mercy, because suppose they offend someone like Srila Prabhupada, then it's really not good for them. So maybe also, in one sense, his mercy to just leave them alone, because otherwise, you know. Because we know sometimes when somebody would be too much like annoying and saying something too much off the track, sometimes Prabhupada, like, there is this boy who was, I told you that always, who was not understanding what's wrong with becoming a dog. You know, Prabhupada was lecturing in university and he was saying that, you know, you can take the birth of a dog, you can lose your human life, you can become a hog, you can become a dog. So in the end of a lecture, any questions? And one boy asked, what's wrong with becoming a dog? And Prabhupada that time said, you have my blessings. that was a bad day for him.
I heard he said
Tatastu.
That has to, you have my blessings. So that was a bad day. So sometimes it's better to stay away from those kind of people, otherwise. Yes. So to convince others, to convince others, mostly, he wants to see. Manyase yadi dachakyam maya drashtumiti prabho yogeshvara tato mitvam dashayat madvanavyayam. If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystic powers, then kindly show me that unlimited universal self. So again, what is Arjun's mood here? Submission. Yes, submission, very humbly. He leaves it up to Krishna. He's not demanding. He's not, you know, even requesting. He made his request. I would like. He submitted his desire. And he called him Purushottamam, hoping that he will understand and he will sanction his desire. And now he leaves it up to Krishna to show it. It all depends on his mercy, because he knows it's a revelation. So it's, if Krishna wants, he will show. Otherwise, it is not possible. You cannot give order to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot give order to the spiritual master. He will speak when he wants to speak. He will say what he wants to say. And if the disciple behaves properly, he will say more. And if the disciple behaves like a fool, he will not speak. And the disciple who is a fool will not even understand that he has not spoken. Yes, we depend so much. Our position is that of ignorance, you know. And we must understand at some point we are dependent. And if we don't understand that, we are not going to get anything. So it is important. We cannot give an order. So we learn from him how to inquire, how to submit a humble request. And he's calling for Krishna's kindness upon him, addressing him as Yogeshwara. That also is acknowledging his power, as we heard before. Yogeshwar means he is the master of Maya. And it is because of that Maya that we cannot see anything. So he is addressing the master of Maya to please remove the covering and show this form, this extraordinary form through which he invests this universe. So he's aware that he will only be able to see through Krishna's unlimited power. Prabhupada says, Arjuna could understand that for a living entity, it is not possible to understand the unlimited infinite. If the infinite reveals himself, then it is possible to understand the nature of the infinite by the grace of the infinite. Arjuna pleads for the inconceivable grace of Krishna. He does not give Krishna orders. Krishna is not obliged to reveal himself unless one surrenders fully in Krishna consciousness and engages in devotional service. That this is not possible for persons who depend on the strength of their mental speculations to see Krishna. So there are two, three more verses here which I have prepared, but though Rukmini will be too upset with me if I continue the class. So we will continue that tomorrow.